event. This year's festival promises to be bigger and better than ever. If you would like to join us as a vendor, reader, or body healer, please call 313-317-6540 or email us at holistic2010@peoplepc.com. Once again, that's call us at 313-317-6540 or email us at holistic2010@peoplepc.com. We hope you are able to join us at this fantastic festival.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Hi, I'd like to report a bear sighting, as in Smokey Bear.
Continue.
I was burning yard waste. He told me to remember that if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
You know, 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
I know that now.
As usual, the talking bear gets all the credit. Always burn responsibly and contact your local fire department for open burning regulations. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
For various incantations of folk, acoustic, and Americana, join me every other Saturday, the first and third of every month. My name is Mia. I'm host of Folk in A Minor, right here on WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves.
The choice on 89.3 is blues, but the impact is on all of us. Hi, I'm Anderson Coleman, inviting you to Blues with a Feeling. Join me on WHFR.FM, Saturdays from 4 to 6 p.m. on the only station making waves.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. Last time we had Mr. Peter Robbins on the show was in May of 2011, when we discussed the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident. I thought it would be apropos to have Peter back on the show to pick his brain about many other high-profile cases that he's researched and some of the lesser-known cases as well. Peter Robbins has been involved in UFO studies for many years as a researcher, investigator, writer, lecturer, activist, and author. He was on the advisory board of Bud Hopkins Intruders Foundation, which researches the alien abduction phenomenon. He's co-author of the British bestseller, Left at East Gate, a first-hand account of the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident, its cover-up, and investigation. His lifetime accomplishments are far too numerous to include here, but needless to say, Peter is considered one of the leading authorities on the UFO phenomenon. And we are happy to have him back again today. welcome back, Peter.
Thanks, David. It's great to be back.
It's good to have you. What have you been doing in the last, when were you here? Oh, my goodness. It's been a while.
It has been. Well, continuing my usual routine of investigation, research, writing, and public speaking, although I'm just back, in fact, last night from a month's work out west, having literally nothing to do with UFOs, but working with an old friend of mine on some of his business work. Mm-hmm. And we, in the course of doing that, we drove over 3,000 miles through parts of Wyoming and Utah and Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and Idaho. So it's been quite a month.
Have you ever heard of airplanes?
I've read about them. Wise guy.
Thank you so much. Peter and I go back. We're friends. We can tease each other.
Yes, exactly.
I hope.
Oh, yes. That's crucial.
Don't hang up on me, Peter. I won't
have a
show here. Okay. I've read about it.
Yeah.
But you you prefer driving, eh?
Well, it's something I have not done to that degree in an amazingly long time. And, you know, even if you have been fortunate enough to travel through this extraordinary country, you forget how beautiful and varied it is and how many nice people there are out there, no matter where you are.
Mm-hmm. Nah, that's true. That's true. 99% of them are good people across the country, across the world, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's 99. That may be a bit optimistic, but certainly the majority of them, I'm convinced. And but otherwise, yeah, I've been continuing to speak at conferences, develop different case materials, and wherever possible to be on the air and, you know, talk with listeners or old friends and hosts like yourself.
Mm-hmm, very good. So, yeah, we discussed, as I was saying earlier, the Rendlesham Forest case, and that's considered to be the UK's Roswell.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, but have there been any other high-profile cases in the UK?
There have. Probably, and again, UFO studies is such a regional thing. If we were in Uruguay or Russia or Poland right now, and we're talking about the best-known cases, they'd be familiar to any, you know, informed listener, where the best-known case in Uruguay completely escapes me. I don't know. Mm. In England, though, and this is one that has stayed with me over the years, in part because it was so compelling and in part because it was so close to Rendlesham Forest incident on the timeline. A month before the Rendlesham Forest incident, and that would take us back to November of 1980, UFOs were observed in Yorkshire, in the Midlands, in central UK, and police officers responded. And one of the officers became, how can I say, extremely involved in the case, in that he was abducted. Mm. And it was something that, you know, obviously changed his life. It was also coupled with a very unusual murder that happened right in tandem to the UFO event. And when Larry Warren, my co-author, and I spoke at the 30th anniversary Rendlesham conference, which would have been in, it was the more recent conference. It was just this past June, back in Suffolk, England, when we spoke, that police officer was there, and he is now retired, and he spoke about his experience about the events in question in a public forum, obviously, but he said it was going to be the last time. Mm. And what stays with me was how even now, and he's in his mid-60s, he is very outspoken, he really has nothing to lose at this time, he still will not, he will not say the phrase, I was abducted by other intelligences. And yet he will concede that that is in fact what happened.
Oh, how does he phrase it? Does he phrase it at all?
Yes, he talked in kind of playful, sort of circumspect ways, had a little fun with language itself. There was no question in any of our minds that, you know, he was saying that it happened, but that he wasn't going to go into the details, that he was still, to put it mildly, not pleased about this, and that he had no intention of going into it in any more detail. So it was kind of fascinating in that respect.
Hmm. So he obviously has a conscious memory of it.
Yes. So it seemed. So it seemed. And, I, you know, there have been obviously a lot more recent cases in the UK. But they, again, being so attached to the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident in so many respects, I kind of have my best feelers out there because I have a lot of local friends. And there are events still occurring in those woods. For example, I have a number of friends and acquaintances in the area who own dogs and will go out of their way to walk them in the forest. Several have reported over the past month or so just having information kind of put into their heads in a way that they found very difficult to explain to others and, as a result, me to you. There have been appearances of other anomalous phenomena of things that they can't explain that continue to occur in the woods. And the area itself, for any of your listeners that can ever get there, East Anglia, Suffolk is only about an hour and a half drive from London. So it's certainly doable, you know, if you're visiting that great city. And for what it's worth, because I know that we're not going to get a huge turnover on this. But I will say right here on the radio, if any of your listeners contact you and say, I am actually and sincerely planning a visit to the United Kingdom, I heard your show with Peter, I heard his offer, and I want to take him up on it, you can give them my email address, and I will help them plan their trip, and with any luck at all, see if I can find an available friend to show them some of the locations of interest.
Wow. It sounds like an adventure.
It goes for you too, Dave.
Oh, I appreciate it. I'm thinking about it right now.
I'll bet. It is a beautiful part of England as well.
But I'll have to drive.
Well, that's fine, but driving your car across the ocean is tricky, as so I understand.
Yeah, okay. Well, okay, back to this now.
Yeah.
Seriously. So what were there occurrences reported in the forest, the Rendlesham Forest, before 1980?
Oh, yes. The that general part of England has a long and storied history, caught up in UFO sightings for sure, but in other kind of paranormal and anomalous legends, myths, and reality. This is certainly not a research area of mine, but I at least begin by respecting what I don't understand until I find out that maybe it's not worthy of respecting. And as you know, there are as many specialty researchers, if not more, in the areas of paranormal study around spirits, ghosts, apparitions, whatever you want to call them. And that is something that goes back into the mists of time in that part of England. In doing the research on Left at Eastgate, I came across, well, several very compelling cases, and I gave a few of them sort of lip service in the book, but decided strategically not to veer off into a, you know, a apparition part of Left at Eastgate.
All right.
In fact, we are all subject to more ridicule than most in paranormal studies. And I have had people who are interested in what I do say, so, you know, you're interested in any other, you know, unusual things? And I will say, yeah, and name a few. And over time, I've come to appreciate that for some people, especially if the topic makes them anxious enough, you know, the strange and unusual in general, that they're looking for ways to take it down or to belittle or make less significant the contributions of people in the field, they will use that against you. And I did not want that book to come out with people saying, oh, Peter, yeah, he's, you know, he's into UFOs and ghosts and spirits and past lives and who all knows what, you know, what a curious character.
Yeah.
But yeah, that part of England has a long history of UFO sightings and paranormal events predating the Rendlesham incidents, most certainly.
Well, now that you mention it, ghostly apparitions, that type of thing, we're talking other dimensional. And isn't it very possible that the UFO phenomenon could be other dimensional as well and have a connection with the ghostly paranormal events?
Well, a great question and an important question. When I first started in this work, my basic view, belief was they're from other planets. The government's lying to us about it. Let's get to the bottom of this and power to the people.
Mm-hmm.
The more years that have passed since my initial entry into this field, I've become a lot more circumspect, a lot more reflective, and a lot more aware that the more I learn, the more I understand how little I know.
Right.
And sure, it makes sense to me that the UFO phenomena, which I am convinced as well as I can be, is at least in part extraterrestrial, may have its roots in visitors from other dimensions or, you know, intelligences that live 50 miles below us or on bases on the bottom of the ocean or whatever, whether or not there is an actual connection with that world of activity that we call the spirit world, I can only guess, and my guess is not worth any more, any less than anyone else's. I just don't know.
Yeah. Because when I had my sighting, and I guess I've told you about it, and you've read about it in my book, the fact that this huge craft seemed to be, the sky seemed to give birth to it, and it emerged from this little pinhole in the sky. And right then, other than learning that UFOs exist, I learned that they come through wormholes or vortexes.
Whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, which has to be other dimensional. So if they are, and I do believe that they are extraterrestrial, but they come through other dimensions.
I guess. Let's remember that what you and I laughingly call reality for most people is three simple little dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot poorer than many animals on Earth based on having these two little eyes right in the front of our head.
Right.
So we're always looking straight ahead and not seeing what's going on behind us.
Mm-hmm.
We hear with a very moderate range of frequencies, so the world of sound is really so much larger than we can generally appreciate. Turn the temperature up or down a few extra degrees and we perish. You know, we're pretty fragile little self-involved creatures, and we actually call this reality. At least, again, most folks do, and find it somewhat anxiety-provoking to think about what they can't see or experience or what is right around the corner or going on right behind them.
That is true. That is true. And, you know, a lot of people say if you can't, especially many, many years ago, not that many years ago, in fact, probably 100 years ago, if you can't experience it with your five senses, it must not exist.
That's correct.
And yet, right now, they're listening to us on the radio, and those radio waves are still in the room. even if they, you know, after the show, they turn off the radio, you see. But it's the same way with television and what have you. So yeah. They always have existed. So let me take just a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves here out of Dearborn, Michigan. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with researcher and author, Mr. Peter Robbins. And, Peter, you were here, of course, a couple of years ago, and gave a wonderful presentation at right here at Henry Ford Community College.
Thank you, and boy, what an experience it was for me.
Yeah.
I was a great audience, and I'll tell you what, the next day going to that museum, I am a museum person, and the museum there is absolutely world-class and fascinating.
Yeah. Henry Ford.
Beginning to end.
Yeah, that's great. And then I jumped in the car, we went to Flint, and spoke to the MUFON folks, and it was amazing 2 days. I really enjoyed it.
But, me too, and I hope that at some point Bill Kinkolsky can find an excuse to bring me back.
Yeah, well, that'd be great. That'd be great. Any excuse.
And Bill, for your listeners that don't know his good name, is state section director for MUFON Michigan and one of my favorite people in the field.
Yeah, Bill Kinkolsky. Yeah, we've had him on the show. And he's a good friend. And experiencer as well.
Yes, yeah. And very outspoken about it. And this deserves a little of our time, I think. As you know, through my years of working as Bud Hopkins' assistant, the abduction phenomena and individuals who have been through it rate very highly in my list of interests and my commitment to learning more about and assisting. Mm-hmm. And Bill is one of those extraordinarily outstanding people in the field who has had experiences, abduction, contact experiences since he was a child, is completely open about it. To the best, my best way of seeing, is at peace with the experiences he has had, and has written a remarkably even-handed book about his experiences and, you know, growing up as a contactee, abductee.
Right.
The thing that really sets it apart from almost any other book I have on the subject in my fairly substantial UFO library, and I have quite a few books written by first-hand people rather than authors and researchers like myself, folks right. like Bill, who have had the experiences and chosen to self-publish their books. He has had experiences that we would call positive, and other ones that are not so positive.
Right.
And he simply tells the truth as best he remembers it, rather than trying to lead us into agenda of they're bad, get scared, they're good, love them, you know, any of the generalizations.
That's
that
right.
Life points us in. Yeah.
That's right.
So double hats off to Bill on that. It's an important book. Do you remember the title offhand?
Yeah, it's entitled Experiencer, Raised in Two Worlds by William J. Kinkolsky. It's K-O-N-K-O-L-E-S-K-Y, Kinkolsky. Yeah, it's Bill's account of his personal abduction experiences as a child through young adulthood. There are some really compelling accounts in there, and some of which were witnessed by third parties as well. So, and he's promised to do a sequel to that book, so I'm really looking forward to reading that as well.
Yeah. But it is an important book. It belongs in every UFO library. And
in fact, I've got to get Bill Kinkolsky back on the show.
Excellent
and
idea.
I know he's listening.
So, hi, Bill.
So we'll get him back on the show.
Great.
So what about the lesser-known UFO cases in the U.K. or in the United States, for that matter, that you may have researched?
Well, gosh, there are so many. Let me focus in on one or two here.
Okay.
And one that I'll give you a little information on right now, that is, I'm going to keep most of it in confidence. It deals with an individual that has had UFO contact and abduction-related experiences her whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody I know well enough to know that, you know, they don't exaggerate. She's in good mental health, all that stuff. And has generally taken the point of view that the experiences that people have can and should be seen in a positive light, that there is an aspect of transcendence here that we should all be focusing on. And even if you have an anxiety-provoking time, this is about change, important change, and hopefully positive change for the human race.
Mm.
And not that long ago, she had a very negative experience, and it really rattled her tremendously.
Mm.
And she is fortunate in having a good support system around her. And we've talked about this to some degree. She also is seeing an individual therapeutically who takes the subject seriously. And I guess that's about as good as it can be when, you know, things are very negative in the way that you're experiencing this. I also realize in having introduced this subject, I can hardly tell you anything about it because it is a confidential situation. So there's an irony.
You don't have to mention any names or anything, but give us a general idea. Can you give us a general idea of the negative experience?
Well, as you know, from reading Bud Hopkins' works, one of the most profoundly disturbing, let's say fascinating in an objective way, aspects of the abduction phenomena when it involves women of reproductive age is a so-called missing pregnancy,
right,
where in some cases the woman knows that she has not been sexually active, and yet she is pregnant. And then at a certain point in the pregnancy, the fetus simply disappears. And I know how that sounds to many of your listeners. It's absolutely, the fact that it could have anything to do with the UFO phenomena, or as we have established as well as we can in the research community, that there are certain pregnancies like this,
mm-hmm,
which are, you know, that it is a human and non-human fetus.
Right.
And that if it comes to term, it is what we call a hybrid.
Right.
And they exist, and I do not know what part of the plan in the great scheme of things they play, but that is the very brief backstory. And my friend, who in fact had decided some time back to not be sexually active until she found a partner that obviously she really cared about and wanted that part of her life, but found that she was pregnant. And some months after that, it was gone. And it was not miscarried. It was not lost in any way.
No.
Except that it was taken on a night. She hemorrhaged, was losing blood, went to the emergency room, and then was confronted with trying to explain her situation, which she chose ultimately not to do because of the way it would be perceived by anybody in the medical field who had no knowledge or experience in this very disturbing area.
Right.
And so that is where she is right now and doing her best to make her peace with this and move on.
All right. Well, I know on a personal level, someone who has experienced that same thing. She's an experiencer, and should I say an abductee, because the difference being one is against their will, and then experiencer, they kind of accept the fact that they are part of a greater reality.
Mm.
So, at any rate, once again, 3 months into the pregnancy, she was told she was pregnant. And 3 months into the pregnancy, she had what she calls a dream about this baby being delivered and seeing the fetus in a sink. And she went back to the doctor who told her, no, you're not pregnant. He even called in another doctor to confirm because it was confirmed 3 months or a couple months before that she was indeed pregnant. And now she wasn't. And generally after a miscarriage, a DNC is required.
That's
right. And there was no DNC required. There was nothing left of it. So, you know, you go explain it.
Yeah.
In conventional terms.
Well, I know that you were fortunate enough to spend time with Bud, that you're familiar with the literature,
mm-hmm.
and that this is not that uncommon. It's shattering. It seems impossible. It sounds crazy. It can't be, and yet it is.
And there it is.
yeah.
Can't be, and yet there it is.
Exactly.
So,
seems to be a mantra in this field.
Okay. So this individual has had UFO experiences outside of this pregnancy business.
Oh, yes, her whole life.
Yeah. And she recalls them consciously?
To a great degree, David, yeah.
Yeah. And has she had hypnosis sessions?
Yes, absolutely.
Have you conducted them? Or?
Oh, no, I'm not. I don't do that kind of thing.
Oh.
I never have. That needs a great deal of training.
Yes.
And that's not me.
Yes. I used to play with it, hypnosis, but it can be dangerous if you really don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, it's something I would never undertake and have met too many qualified people and ones who maybe should not be doing it, but certainly have good intentions. But it is something that requires an extraordinary amount of training, supervision, and ultimately being the kind of person, well, with the character and the patience and the compassion to undertake that kind of work.
Right. So other cases, either in the UK or around the world, I was going to ask you, but, you know, this has been on the web for a while, this video in Turkey. Supposedly, you know, Dr. Roger Lear touts this video in Turkey of a craft and alleged being at the window of the craft.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
I am familiar with it. And I have to say, Roger is somebody I have tremendous respect and admiration for. Mm-hmm. For any of your listeners who are not aware, he's a podiatric surgeon who has pioneered removing anomalous implants from people associated with UFO abduction and contact events.
Mm-hmm.
I've grown so suspicious of moving images unless I have a stack of witnesses who are credible. Let's face it, we can do anything with film now, absolutely anything.
That's right.
And make it look completely effective in a highly detailed way like Jurassic Park or something, or in a more sketchy, fast way.
Right.
So it's frustrating to me, but when a UFO case or an allegation is built on video footage, I have to back off. I need more. It used to be that, you know, we needed better footage, and now it's so good, and I don't mean just too good to be true good, but, you know, it can mimic anything from a handheld shaky camera to, you know, a highly refined professional series of images.
Yeah.
I am fascinated by it. I have certain special feelings for the country of Turkey. I have colleagues who are from there, and I just don't know enough to have what I'd call an intelligent or an informed opinion on it.
Right.
It's frustrating.
Well, you know, they used to say that all these UFO photographs and videos are all grainy and cloudy and too far away. They're not very good.
That's the way they are. That's the way they were.
And then all of a sudden, these pictures are too good. They're too clear. They're too detailed. What do you want? Something in the middle?
Well, exactly. There's no ideal. For me, the factors still remain. Who is the person who's brought this to our attention?
Right.
Are they credible? Are they worthy of our respect? Mm. Do they have any previous association with the subject? And if so, is it positive or negative? Are they somebody who took the subject with a great deal of skepticism before they photographed or filmed what they've put forward in public? Mm. Does it seem to have really affected them? Do they want any money for this? It's quite a list of questions.
Yeah.
And not that answering them all, quote-unquote, correctly makes the footage authentic. But I'll tell you what, if it's somebody who has come forward half a dozen times before purporting to have footage of an authentic UFO, if they'll be happy to share it with you for only $1,000,
mm-hmm.
if they're looking for a book deal, I'm already more cautious about the reality of it. And it may be real. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, and then they ruin it. I remember there was one case in the Detroit area that a young man, and, you know, we're talking a 21, 22-year-old young man, happened to, you know, was outside, and he saw this typical disc-shaped craft over his house. And he grabbed his camera and he started taking pictures and called the police, and the police said, you know, if this is a false report,
oh boy,
this was a false report, then you know, you're in trouble. And so he hung up the phone and he called the local news. And the news allegedly came out there and was videotaping this craft above his house. And then this kid thought, you know, I have the holy grail of photos because, you know, now I have the smoking gun proof that UFOs exist. He tried to contact MUFON. He tried to sell us the photos, because this proves it, you know. Well, it proved it to him.
Yeah.
Didn't realize, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of pictures of UFOs out there, and some of them even are real, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he wanted money for it because he did not realize he was going to sell it to, you know, tabloids if he didn't get money from MUFON. Well,
yeah.
MUFON refused to pay him. Because there would always be that stigma. They got money for it. Yeah, so. Anyway. What were we talking about?
Well, about cases. But yeah. Actually, I had wanted to tell you a little about a project that I've been working on for more than a year that is not a UFO case. It's a film about the UFO cover-up. In so many words, it's an independent film that is being developed right now, and it's called the Apollo Minus Project. I've consulted on films and documentaries over the years, but none have either captured my imagination to the degree that this one has, or that I've become more deeply involved in. I guess now I've been working with the a writer, director, and producer and their team for more than a year now. And the story centers around a young man's struggle to make sense of, find out the facts concerning his grandfather's disappearance. It begins with the Apollo 11 mission in 1969. Now, let me say here that for so many of us in the field of UFO studies, it's hardly the subject of conspiracy or far-out possibilities or crazy thinking to assume logically that as our government developed NASA, they also developed a military arm, say even a military intelligence arm, of our space exploration program. And that for every space shot, you know, that you and I kept our eyes on from the time we were boys until the ones that go on now, which are so routine that it's been years since, you know, we've really had a sense of the astronauts' names unless there's some terrible tragedy. Mm. It's just a job that continues to be done. And the idea that there have been classified missions, some of them with reasons that we might find extremely sensational, that we've simply never heard about, that have been either conducted under a military intelligence wing of NASA or by a separate organization within the military or what have you. Mm. Apollo 11 is often talked about as a mission where astronauts saw stuff they shouldn't have seen.
Right.
And the premise, in part, for this film is that our protagonist, our lead character, his name is Daniel, and he's a young filmmaker, that his grandfather was on the follow-up mission, the secret mission that went to the far side of the moon, and in the process of doing this, did interface with other intelligences.
Hmm.
That it emotionally destabilized the men involved to a great degree, and that, again, his grandfather disappeared. The idea of the film is to shoot it in a documentary style, to consciously blur the lines between what is absolutely understood and real and what is the product of our brilliant screenwriter's very informed imagination. Mm. And so it is the story of a 25-year-old guy who disappears himself while finishing this documentary on his grandfather.
Mm.
And I have to tell you, it will, again, it's in pre-production. It will probably be filmed this autumn, and with any luck, it will be a commercial release next year. I think it's an amazingly powerful story, very well told. And one of the things that drew me to it is a brilliant device, an idea that the screenwriter had. And it has to go, it goes like this. At a certain point in the plot, our star, our lead character, starts to learn more about ufology. And rather than create imaginary characters as ufologists, and say this one based on this person, this one on that person.
Mm-hmm.
He got the idea after learning about the field that there might be some people in the field who would be willing in, you know, very small parts to actually appear as themselves, to play themselves in the film. And in fact, that is what is happening. And I can tell you that myself and Richard Dolan and several other noteworthy colleagues will be doing just that, which I think will be a great novelty, but I think also phenomenally interesting and add another depth of reality to this documentary style film.
Mm.
Again, it's called Apollo Minus Project. Mm. And if you Google that, you will very quickly come to their website, and there is a trailer there. Which will give you an idea of the feeling and the idea of the film. And I hope a lot of your listeners will visit it, and that perhaps when I come back on your show as a guest later this year, I'll be able to tell you a lot more about it.
It sounds
my
great.
My non-disclosure agreement prohibits my getting into a lot of detail right now, but all for the right reasons.
But you're still in production, right?
Oh, yes. Well, it's still in pre-production. It's all of the work that needs to be done before it's actually shot is going on right now, big time. And I think it's a wonderful team that I'm working with of professionals, and I am totally caught up in it.
It sounds great. If you need a good actor, let me know. My son is an actor.
Okay.
Plug there.
Then you will have to send me his resume.
Okay.
And I will get it into the people that look at that stuff. And who knows, David?
Who knows? Appreciate it. And right now I've got to take just one more minute to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves in Dearborn, Michigan, out of Henry Ford Community College. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm your host, David Twitchell, and we're speaking with author and researcher, UFO researcher, and now film producer, Mr. Peter Robbins. Have you done any other films?
Well, I've been asked my opinion on this, that, or the other thing. Let's just call me an advisor at this point on this one. But this is the first one that I've ever become so fully engaged in. And it's a change of pace for sure, but I've realized, not that I wasn't aware, how important films with the kind of edge of truth that this one has are to helping educate people to how serious the subject is, how real it is, and to the fact that we are being lied to generation after generation about
really?
The truth here.
Really?
No surprise for folks like you.
I didn't see that one coming.
I know. Well, I'm glad you're sitting down. I assume you were.
Yeah. While we're on the subject of actors and plays and what have you, it's my understanding that a New York actor and playwright by the name of Ryan Sprigg is working in collaboration with you on a stage play about the ensuing investigation of the Rendlesham Forest incident.
Ryan Sprigg, who is just that, he's a fine young actor who also is an accomplished professional playwright and who has done small roles in films and works with an acting company in New York City, contacted me last year, not about collaborating. This is his project, but he did ask me if I would be willing to assist him. And his idea was not to try to undertake a stage play, which are a lot rarer than screenplays, boy oh boy, on the subject of the Rendlesham Forest investigation in general or Larry Warren's and my book Left at Eastgate in specific, but the story in so many words behind Left at Eastgate, the story of myself and my co-author, two very different people from very different backgrounds on this extraordinary adventure, voyage, journey, whatever you want to call it, in trying to piece together what happened to him and the larger story behind it. And Ryan was also interested as a character in the play of my late sister Helen, who is the person that got me into this work, an abductee herself and a brilliant performing artist as well as visual artist who became a real part of getting the job done for Larry and me. The play, which again, like the screenplay Apollo Minus Project, Ryan's stage play, which is going to be called Rendlesham, is being written as we speak. And I have, at this point, been more than happy to do a number of interviews with him, to loan him a lot of original research materials, to point him to other people who I think will help him flesh out the characters of Larry and myself. And if any of your listeners are on Facebook, they can either become a friend of Ryan, and that's Ryan Sprague, S-P-R-A-G-U-E, or visit the Rendlesham page. It is just called Rendlesham, which is the name of the play. And I should also say here, with respect to Ryan, if he chose to do this and I was not interested in assisting him, he was certainly well within his rights to do it anyway. Nobody ever contacted me to say that they were working on a play and that there's going to be a character in it who was me. And so I thought, maybe I should do my best to assist him to do his best.
Yeah.
Otherwise, who knows what that goofball on stage with my name would be like. So if Ryan, if you're listening, I love you. You're doing a great job. Ryan also is kind of multitasking in the universe besides acting and writing and doing his other theater-related stuff.
Right.
He is really an up-and-coming UFO writer and investigator who has had several articles published in the Distinguished Open Minds magazine and who will be out at the big International UFO Congress in Phoenix that they sponsor at the end of the month. And
I
wish him the best on this.
That's end of February, correct?
Yeah, coming up around the corner.
Oh, no, it's behind us now.
No.
It's now March.
Not quite.
Don't make me crazy. This is being aired in March.
Oh, that's funny, of course. Yes, we are now in the future. I forgot.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that is a good trick, David.
But you just missed it, and it's too bad.
Yes. You just missed it, folks, unless you didn't, and I hope that's the case with many of you.
But I tell you, the Open Minds out in Phoenix, I used to go to the ones that in Laughlin. Yeah,
that the Browns put on.
I tell you, it's just great. I mean,
as you probably know, Bob and his team were able to produce that amazing conference for 19 years, and the stats are remarkable. They'd have more than 40 speakers at some conferences, more than 1,000 people in attendance, and it was 7 days and 8 nights. That was amazing.
This one
is no slouch. I mean, it's 4 days and like 20 speakers, and it will continue to grow, I'm sure.
Yeah. I had my resume into them as a speaker, and every time I go, I meet some of the speakers and they say, are you speaking? No, I wasn't asked. I felt like the redheaded stepchild.
I hope that will change in future.
Yeah, well, put in a good word for me, will you?
When they invite me back, I will.
When they invite you back. Okay, so yeah, I've got to get a hold of Ryan Sprague, and see if he'll come on the show and talk to us about that play.
I mean, I would hope he would. And he is smart as a whip, and I would imagine it would be a great interview, Dave.
No, sounds like it. And it's all about the ensuing investigation of the Rendlesham Forest.
It's about
incident.
Again, this is his project, not mine. I haven't read it. But my sense is it's about the investigation and the very human aspect and dynamic behind it. It's more about the people than the little bits of facts that we picked up.
Right.
But I don't know. It'll be one of the things which will be a surprise for us all when it's finally produced in New York.
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting and a very well-deserved twist, because shows like my own and many other shows on UFOs, they talk about the nuts and bolts UFOs. They talk about the alien beings. They talk about alien abduction.
Yes.
But very few of them go into, what about the people that see these things? What about the people that are abducted? How are they handling this, the human side of it?
Yeah, and I'll even take it one step beyond that and say, how does this impact on the lives of those of us who do the work? And it caused me, especially at one point, tremendous stress, more than I've ever experienced in any other time or aspect of my life. And it changed me to a great degree. I bounced back, but there were some pretty dark passages to go through. And Larry's courage and his conviction to get this story out really shine through all of the darkest times. But we bounced off each other quite a bit over the years, and emerged as two very close friends who have shared something that very few people have in terms of committing yourself to a job like this. And I will always be proud of what we're able to accomplish and of getting the opportunity to work with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I've met both Larry Warren and of course, Peter Robbins. And they're two dichotomous people, personality-wise. But you guys just seem to gel as one when it comes to this Reynolds and Forrest. You just, as one, you know, you have one goal, and you go for it. And
you got it.
You're a team.
Well, we sure were. And I stay in regular contact with Larry. He has lived in Liverpool, England for many years. Mm-hmm. He is the father of a great, God, I guess about 11-year-old son, 12 now. Oh, my God, I don't know. But like a real human being. Mm-hmm. And he's a great dad, and I'm sure we'll be friends the rest of our lives.
That's great. I was going to ask you, you know, we were talking about hoaxes earlier. Don't know if this is a hoax or not, but some people seem to take it very seriously. This, maybe you've heard of the black-eyed children or black-eyed kids that allegedly come to your door and want to use your phone or want something to eat and don't let them in. They have.
I've heard about it, and my first thought is, okay, you know, there are kids that act unusual and make these requests. But why would I assume that there was a paranormal aspect unless they disappeared in front of me or, you know, manifested something, rather than something that has become kind of an urban legend, and because it has, can be replicated by young people anywhere.
Yeah.
Once they know about it for whatever reasons they want. Yeah. So for me, that's something of a non-starter, although if I can, you know, if anybody can show me evidence to support anything truly anomalous or phenomenological about them that really sets them off, I'll certainly be interested in seeing it.
Well, they're supposed to have their eyes are completely black, no whites around them. It's just all pupil, you know?
Well, that should be enough immediately to make the person that comes to the door scream. Also, I'm going to bet, I would bet right now that, you know, you can go online and order special contact lenses that simply make your eyes black.
Yes.
And that, for me, even if they're hard to find, is a more realistic possibility than hybrid alien children coming to my door and asking me for a glass of water or whatever.
Yes. And if you see it on the internet,
you know it's true.
You know it's true. You've seen that commercial. If you can't lie on the internet.
No, never.
I heard that on the internet.
And well, that may be the truest thing that I will hear or you will say today.
And then she introduces her date that was supposed to be a French model, and he looks like, well, we won't go into it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't look like a French model.
No doubt.
So, obviously you don't know about that commercial.
No. I haven't been watching much TV.
Okay. It's funny, though.
Obviously there's a reason. Now I should.
Yeah. So you won't miss that commercial.
I guess.
So what's your plans in the near future? We only have another minute, but let us know.
Well, my next public appearance will be May 10th to 12th at a conference that takes place in Sebring, Florida. It's called StarWorks USA UFO Symposium. And I'll not only be speaking there on Rendlesham, but I will be emceeing the conference, and it includes a number of real luminaries and close colleagues and good friends and people in the work that I really admire, including a much higher percentage of women speakers, which I am hoping we will see increase at UFO conferences in general. But for anybody that is interested in finding out about it, it's a great value. It's going to be a wonderful special weekend. We're coming up to the limit of folks that can be accommodated. Just Google StarWorksUSA.com, one word, StarWorksUSA.com, and I sure hope that you will be able to join me in Florida in May. I will say one other thing about it, which is that the keynote speaker is a gentleman named Paul Hillier. Paul is a retired Canadian Secretary of Defense who takes the subject of UFO reality extremely seriously. He is already, I believe, in his 80s, and he has made it clear to Paula Harris, our conference organizer, that this will probably be his last public appearance. One more important reason to try to attend this very special conference.
That's right. And once again, your independent film, they can find that at where?
Yes. Just go to apollo-zero.com. And again, the film is named Apollo Minus Zero. I'll be able to tell you more about it as the year passes. It should be out, hopefully, in theaters everywhere sometime next year. And I can promise you it will be a film you won't forget.
Peter Robbins, thank you so much for joining us. And I hope to talk to you again real soon.
Me too, David.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye now.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, and then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m., when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
WHFR, Dearborn. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Best of Broadway. I'm Joe, host of Big Band Broadway and Beyond on Friday mornings, and today we're going to start a two-hour program that will bring a score or scores of Broadway musicals to you and also individual cuts from different Broadway plays and different performances of Broadway music. You're listening. This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves, coming to you from the campus of Henry Ford Community College here in Dearborn, Michigan. And we have a great lineup today. We're going to start off with the play Phantom of the Opera. Now, the storyline goes like this. It begins when an opera ghost terrorizes the cast and crew of the French opera house while tutoring a chorus girl. He finally drives the lead soprano crazy, so she and her friend leave. The girl is able to sing.